Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point.
If the drug companies are embarrassed, or if they're afraid that patients will be scared off by their drug prices, reduce your prices. It's that simple.
Well, that was Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar on CNBC last month, talking about one of the rare issues that earns bipartisan consensus, the cost of prescription drugs. However, while there is across-the-aisle agreement that drug prices may be too high, there's considerable disagreement on how to bring them down. So perhaps we might benefit from looking at how they do it abroad, particularly in Germany, which, like the U.S., relies on private health insurance and private doctors, and the government does not set prices. But Germans pay a flat 10 euros, just $11, for almost every prescription drug they take. So how do they do it? This hour on Point, how Germany pulled down prescription drug prices and what the U.S. could learn. And you can join us. How large a chunk of your family's budget goes to prescription drugs? And if your drug plan is pretty good, does that mean your premiums are high? And while we argue in the United States over government-funded health care, is there a better private model that Republicans and Democrats in Congress could come together on? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining me from Washington is Noam Levy. He writes about national health care policy for the Los Angeles Times, and we're checking in with him occasionally as he works on a fascinating ongoing series about health insurance. You might remember that we talked to him a couple of weeks ago about high deductible plans. And Noam's latest story is about German drug pricing. We have a link to it at onpointradio.org. Noam, it's great to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so this morning as I was talking about this hour with our producer, Steph Katsonis, in our editorial meeting, it occurred to me that we're so locked into a particular frame of reference regarding drug pricing in America that it was hard for me to even imagine that other countries using largely private systems could come up with very different plans. So take us out of this particular frame of reference. What caused Germany, first and foremost, to rethink how it prices prescription drugs?
So the first thing well, there are a couple things really to keep in mind about the German healthcare system. Nobody's healthcare system is an exact replica of anybody else's. And of course, nobody does it like we do. But most other countries have a bit more rational systems for the way they do things. But I think a lot of people think, oh, if it's Europe, it must be a single payer system. It must be like Medicare for all. The government just has a health insurance plan and everybody gets their coverage that way. That is true in some places like the United Kingdom, but it's not true in Germany or Holland or Switzerland or a number of other wealthy countries. Germany is kind of interesting, I think, for a number of reasons from the U.S. perspective. Number one, it's the largest country in Europe. It's 80 plus million, which obviously is not as big as the United States, but it is the most important country in Europe. And it has a healthcare system that relies on private health insurers. Doctors are privately employed. And so in broad brushstrokes, that's not too dissimilar to the way that our healthcare system is organized.
And another similarity, as you point out in your reporting, is that they were feeling potentially crippled in Germany by the rising cost of prescription drugs or of healthcare.
That's right. And just as in this country, where when the price of drugs goes up, that puts pressure on the insurance premiums that all of us have to pay, German sickness funds, as they're called, these are health insurers. They're a little bit different than ours because they're not for profit, and they're much more highly regulated than ours are. But when those sickness funds had to cover very expensive drugs starting in the early 2000s, they were under a lot of pressure to raise premiums. And that, of course, was not going to be popular with German patients. So there was a growing consensus about a decade ago that something had to be done.
So then tell us about this new system they came up with, because I keep coming back to how you started the story and how we started this hour, that somehow the Germans have come up with a system where for most drugs, Germans themselves individually will not pay more than 10 euros per prescription. What are they doing? Yeah.
Well, it's important to start with why it is that there is that limit. Of course, American patients know all too well that when you go to the drugstore, you oftentimes don't know how much your copay is going to be, how much your deductible is going to be. You could be paying a few bucks for that drug that your doctor prescribed to you. You could be paying $1,000. So Germany has a much more tightly regulated limit on how much patients can be required to pay for a whole range of medical services. And as you mentioned, the maximum per prescription cost for German patients is basically 10 euros or about $11. In many cases, it's lower than that. And there are, for lower income patients, exemptions. Remember I said that if drugs are really expensive, that puts pressure on insurers to raise premiums. Well, insurers can't charge patients more, right, because it's a 10 euro maximum. So they instead were under pressure to raise the premiums. So when those premiums started going up, Germany stepped back and said, wait a minute, we don't want to have the government set prices because it's not a government-run system. We want the sickness funds to continue to get prices from workout prices with drug companies. But we don't want drug companies to just be able to set any old price that they want, which is essentially what they had been doing in Germany. So they stepped back and they said, there's sort of two things that are really important here. One, we want to know whether or not a lot of these big name, expensive new drugs that drug companies were bringing to market were really worth everything that the drug companies said they were. And so that was the first important sort of realization. Let's step back, they said, and let's say, how can we assess whether drug A, which let's say, you know, Pfizer is proposed to bring to market, is really better than drug B, which we've been using for 10 years to treat breast cancer, let's say.
Now, just to jump in here, this question about is it better is a fundamentally different one than we ask here in the United States through the FDA approval process, right? The FDA approval process doesn't necessarily measure if something is more effective than other drugs on the market.
That's right. I mean, the FDA is a safety regulatory agency. It's trying to figure out whether the drug is safe and broadly speaking, effective. There is a European process for the European equivalent of the FDA that does the same thing. But the FDA is not charged with comparing these new drugs to existing therapies and trying to make a judgment about whether new drugs are better or worse.
So now what I was going to say is, as you've reported, so what they have in Germany now is this an independent panel of experts, essentially, who come together and look at all the information provided by the drug company to determine whether or not the new product is more effective than what's currently on the market.
That's right.
Go ahead.
Well, it's not a government agency.
This is
an independent, non-governmental agency. It's actually not even located in Berlin where the government is. It's in Cologne on the other side of Germany. And as you indicated, one important part of what this agency is charged with doing is looking at what the drug companies are submitting. So the drug companies have to make their case to this agency to say, look, our drug is much better than what you've been using to treat breast cancer for the past 10 years. And then this agency looks at that evidence and makes a recommendation and says, well, it looks like it really is a lot better. Or no, it's really no better at all. Or maybe it's better, but we just can't see enough of the evidence. And this is sort of an important point because I don't want to get too deep into the weeds here. A lot of times when drug companies market their drugs to people here in this country, and of course we've all seen these ads on television, we see how great it is, and putting aside all the side effects that they have to tell us about, we're sold on this idea that it will cure whatever the disease is. And when in the United States health insurers sort of look at that stuff, it all happens sort of in a black box. They're doing some of this kind of comparison, but there's no open process and there's no standard way of assessing kind of is it really better. So when drug companies come forward, a lot of times they sort of test their drugs against placebos, right? They say we're testing our new bug and it's better than doing nothing at all.
Right.
That's not the question that they're interested in answering in Germany. They're not interested in does this work better than just letting your breast cancer develop? Is it better than the other drugs out there that are used to treat breast cancer? Because that can inform how much the health insurers in Germany should pay.
And again, just to underscore, this is done by an independent panel of experts, and they issue a public report. So there's much more transparency already in step one of the German process than there is in the United States process.
And that's right.
I'm going to come back in a little later in the show to this independent panel of experts in a second, but I do want to get to the second step. So after, as you've reported, after this panel puts out their assessment and says, yes, we actually do think it is this new drug is more effective than what's currently on the market, then something else amazing happens in Germany. There's an entirely different model for price negotiation. What do the Germans do?
So in Germany, I mentioned that the insurers are private, so they're independent from one another. But very importantly, they negotiate collectively. So all the insurers get together and they sit across the table from the negotiators from Eli Lilly or Pfizer or Sanofi, and they say, and they use this independent report as a point of to inform their negotiations. So if this drug doesn't get a very good recommendation and it's only a little bit better than what's out there right now, that obviously strengthens the hands of the sickness funds and saying, you know, you're asking us to pay 100 times more than what's out there on the market right now when this independent assessment says this is marginally better than what we've been using for the last 10 years. But this collective negotiation means that there's one price that is agreed to in the system. And then really, really importantly, really, really different from the way we do it here, it's public. It's transparent. We know, and Germans know what the price that is negotiated between the drug companies and the sickness funds is. And of course, that's completely different than here, where everything is a black box.
I haven't even heard you mention the words pharmacy benefit managers or reimbursements or kickbacks in the German context. This is a world I do not recognize, Noam, but hang on here for a second because we got to take a quick break. We are talking with Noam Levy. He writes about national healthcare policy for the Los Angeles Times. The latest in his ongoing series about American health insurance takes a look at how Germany has managed to pull down prescription drug prices and whether or not the German example, or at least parts of it, could be applicable here in the United States. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're looking this hour about how Germany has pulled the sky-high cost of prescription drugs down rather significantly. And why that matters here in the United States? Because Germany has a private system of health insurance, private doctors, and the government doesn't set drug prices, but they've come up with a way, nevertheless, to get a handle on them. And we're joined today by Noam Levy. He writes about national healthcare policy for the Los Angeles Times, and this German example is his latest story in an ongoing series he's doing about health insurance in the United States. Now, Noam, before the break, we were talking about how in Germany, as you've reported here, these private health insurers, I'm calling them health insurers just as a familiar name. I know that that's not what they're called in the United States, in Germany, but that they come together to negotiate drug prices with pharmaceutical companies. So the key thing there is that it's not the government sitting on the other side of the table in Germany, but these private groups. But ultimately, it's still just one collective that the drug companies are negotiating with. That seems pretty remarkable.
It is. And obviously, our system would not, in its current incarnation, allow something like this without some broad exemption from antitrust law. But the German system is built much more around an idea of consensus. And this gets back to something I mentioned at the top of the program, that, of course, every healthcare system is different. Mm-hmm. It comes out of a different political culture. And there is much more of a sort of consensus-driven ethos to the German system than there is in our system, which has historically prized independent actors who compete with one another, oftentimes for profit. But again, I think it is important to keep in mind the distinction that you highlighted, which is to say that it's not the government stepping in to actually set the prices or do the negotiation.
I see. But your point about antitrust, though, is very important because I mean, just as for some numbers here, we're seeing that some of the most recent estimates for Germany in terms of the numbers of insurance groups, it's about 100. In the United States, as of 2017, there were at least 900. Is there a way for any of those insurers to come together to negotiate with pharmaceutical companies that wouldn't immediately run up against antitrust laws? If by definition, they're pulling together, that seems to be problematic in terms of how the U.S. would view these negotiations.
I'm not a lawyer, but my sense is that, yes, there would be antitrust issues with any kind of a collective negotiation between payers and individual pharmaceutical companies. That being said, it is worth noting, I think, that while there are a large number of health insurers in the United States, the business of negotiating drug prices, there are some very large players. I mean, CVS, Caremark, United/Optum each have tens of millions of lives that they are covering. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of market power themselves. However, one thing, again, that distinguishes the German system is that a lot of what happens is transparent. So it's harder, I think it's fair to say, for some of the gaming to go on that we see in our pharmaceutical pricing market, and which the Trump administration and Congress have highlighted in the various proposals that they have put forward to tackle this issue.
Right. Even the transparency is a complete sea change versus, as you've been pointing out, from what we have
complete
here.
Sea change. And I think it's worth noting that not only sort of is this useful as a matter of negotiation, but it also serves an important clinical purpose. I mean, we hear a lot of discussion in this country, I think rightfully so, that our enormous healthcare tab is driven in some cases by the use of high cost and in some cases unnecessary services. And there have been sort of fitful efforts at the federal and state levels to better assess what's called the comparative effectiveness of different therapies, whether they be drug against drug or drug against some other kind of intervention. And this has been very difficult to do in no small part because drug companies historically have resisted this kind of analysis because it threatens the very large price tags that they can command for their new drugs. What Germany does, Germany continues to have relatively high drug prices compared to other countries in Europe, which have a more heavy-handed government approach. But that transparency makes it harder for drug companies to argue that everybody needs this new $100,000 drug. And importantly, it also provides clinicians with some important information. All the reports that are generated about new drugs are public. Mm-hmm. And so for oncologists who are trying to stay up on whether on all the new drugs out there to treat one cancer or another, there's a tremendous resource out there of all the data which has been standardized. There's really no equivalent of that in the United States for clinicians.
But Noam, I wonder, is the sheer existence of an independent panel of experts making decisions about drug effectiveness, could that run up against major political problems here in the United States? Because I imagine there are many situations, or at least some, in which the independent panel determines that there isn't adequate evidence of greater effectiveness, but there's still demand amongst patients for the new drug. And so you see what I'm saying? Like anytime we have the word of a panel making decisions for people regarding healthcare, there's immediate pushback, at least in the United States.
Yes, one can sort of hear the death panel cries
already.
And let me make two points about that. One is that Germany was quite sensitive to this issue as well, in no small part because of the country's history. And so one thing that the German system doesn't do that other countries like the UK, the National Health Service, does is in their analysis, they are not actually performing economic analysis of the benefits of the new drug. So they're not saying, for example, that this new drug is worth $100,000 if you're under 50 years old. But if you're over 75 years old, then your chances of living very much longer are not high and you're not earning money anymore for the system, we don't want to spend $100,000 to give you this drug. Now, that way of looking at the economic value of drugs based on whom they're being prescribed for, it's a common way of analyzing drugs in other countries. Mm. The Germans didn't want to do that for precisely the political issue that you raise. And probably that's goes a long way to explaining why the German drug pricing system has not been particularly controversial since it came out. Now, all that being said, you are correct. If there is a new drug that comes out and the independent agency charged with assessing it concludes that it's not particularly – it's not much of an improvement over existing therapies, yes, there have been cases where drug companies and sometimes patient groups have pushed back and said, we want this new drug. And if there is no agreement on a drug price through this negotiation, there have been instances in which drug companies have said, well, we're packing up our toys and going home. We're not going to sell our drug in Germany if we can't get the price that we want. And that has been raised as a warning in this country about stepping too aggressively into market regulation of prescription drugs. Now, I think there are a couple things that are worth saying about that in the German context. One is that that phenomena, while it has happened, is relatively rare.
Mm-hmm.
Germany is the largest market in Europe, and so drug companies are loath not to sell there. I would expect there be a similar dynamic here in the United States. The other interesting feature of the German system is that we talked about this very regulated negotiation process.
Yes.
One thing which it does is it allows drug companies to sell their drugs at the price that they want for 1 year while this negotiation and assessment process is going on. That's a pretty sweet enticement for drug companies to stay engaged in the process. And as I said, it has been relatively rare for drug companies to just walk away.
Yeah. So I wonder, and you don't have to answer this, this is just me wondering about the future, about how the system will work as we enter a world of therapies that become ever more targeted, you know, down to groups of people or even individuals.
It is something that, so I spent about 2 weeks in Germany this spring reporting this story with the help of a grant from the Association of Healthcare Journalists and the Commonwealth Fund. And it is something I heard frequently from officials with the insurance fund, officials at the agency doing the drug assessments, and others, that when we do get these highly targeted drugs, the system is going to definitely face substantially greater challenges.
Yeah.
Can I make one
sure.
one final point?
Please.
I think the other thing that's interesting about the German model and that makes it, I think, perhaps why drug companies may be more inclined to stay, even if they can't get the prices that they can command, for example, in this country, is that, remember we talked about how patients only have to pay a maximum of 10 euros
yes.
for a prescription. So think about sort of what that means from the perspective of patients actually taking their drugs, right? I mean, in this country, there's an epidemic among patients not taking the drugs that they're prescribed because they can't afford the copays. I mean, we hear about this all the time. There's a lot of data now about it, even sick patients not filling their prescriptions because they can't afford them. Additionally, we've built a whole kind of infrastructure in this country to deal with the fact that patients can't afford their drugs. So insurers make patients go through prior authorization and step therapy, right? People, your listeners who have sick relatives probably know somebody who, you know, couldn't get the drug that they wanted right away because their insurer said, well, no, you got to try this one first. And if that doesn't work, then we can go to the more expensive one and so on and so on. And drug companies, if you go to major American drug companies, they have floors of people working on charity programs to provide people assistance to buy their really, really expensive drugs. That whole infrastructure is there because we haven't been able to control our drugs. In Germany, it's interesting. Because the out-of-pocket costs are so limited, 10 euros max, you don't have nearly as many problems with patients not filling their prescriptions. And I don't want to sugarcoat this too much. I mean, there are issues, of course, with patients taking their drugs and generics and how people get the drugs that they want. No system is perfect. But that whole problem that drug companies have getting their product to patients in this country who can't afford them is ameliorated quite substantially by the way the German system's organized.
But we should say, though, that that 10 euro cap, though, is part of evidence of Germany's overall more greater comfort with regulation, though, which is another mountain for us to climb here in the United States. But Noam, every time we have you on, the phones light up here. I mean, we've got Vermont, Florida.
I don't know if that's good or bad.
it's good. Vermont, Florida, Connecticut, Virginia, Georgia. I got to get at least some of these people in here. So let's go to Cindy, who's calling from Randolph, Vermont. Cindy, you're on the air.
Hi. How are you doing tonight? This is a fascinating conversation to me because I have experienced the German system because of my son, who was diagnosed with an illness right prior to going for an exchange year in Germany. We had a massively hard time managing to keep him in his medication, which it runs about $80,000 a year without insurance, and depending upon, I'm a small business owner, so my insurance has been challenging to keep in place, and so what amount of coverage we had kind of varied based off of our income with Obamacare and at times. And anyway, he went to Germany, and at the time he went, his medication was not approved in their system, and we had to fly him back to the United States to have the prescription refilled, and then fly him back to Germany again. And then he came home from Germany and spent a year here, and then we chose to send him to Germany to go to college. In a big consideration was the medication. And so he is there now, and he's able to get his medication through the German system for 10 euro a month. And
amazing.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Well, Cindy, thank you so much for your call. So firsthand experience right there in what Noam Levy is talking about regarding differences between the U.S. and German experience. I want to now bring into the conversation Lee Purvis. Joins us from Washington. She's a director of health services research at the AARP Public Policy Institute. She's an expert on prescription drug pricing and drug coverage under Medicare. Lee Purvis, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what parts of the German drug pricing system do you think could potentially be imported into the United States?
I think the German focus on comparing prescription drugs is really something that we need to take a hard look at. As you've been talking about previously, the fact that prescription drugs come on the market in the United States and we really have absolutely no idea whether they're any better than existing products is really problematic. And having a better idea of how well these products work and whether they represent a real advancement would be incredibly helpful when we start talking about these incredibly high-priced drugs.
Well, so is the comparison of the effectiveness comparison, is that at all part of the drug approval process in the United States? Does that information exist? We just don't look to it when we're trying to price these drugs.
Well, as we were talking about previously, FDA doesn't really take a look at the comparative effectiveness research that may exist. But one thing I've always liked to point out is the fact that clearly it does exist because other countries are using it. So perhaps we could find a way to access the research that already exists and use it ourselves to our benefit. I think that might be one step in a very positive direction.
Is there any concern that in the German context, it's the individual drug company itself that's providing all this information to this panel of experts? I mean, is there a possibility for gaming the system right there?
Well, I would hope that the people who are evaluating the research would be able to determine whether or not there are questionable methodologies behind the research that's being presented. And I also know that Germany has pretty strict regulations in terms of how much research needs to be provided, and there are penalties if they don't provide it. So I think they do go out of the way to make sure that they have the most accurate and comprehensive picture possible.
Yeah. So this is a form of transparency that goes far beyond the conversations that we're having right now in the United States. I mean, we're only beginning relatively recently to talk about just being transparent in the list price of drugs. And there's already been significant pushback against that. So calling for a greater form of transparency and effectiveness would seem to be a good idea, but a challenging one to sell in the United States.
I think it could be a tough sell, but I do think just the basic question of is this better than what's already out there is one that I think appeals to a lot of people. It's a very simple question, and I think a lot of people are kind of amazed that we aren't asking it already. Mm. So to the extent that that sort of transparency is helpful, I think we could certainly get some support for it.
Well, Lee Purvis and Noam Levy, stand by here for just a second. The music means we got to take a quick break. We are talking about what the United States could learn from Germany's example of a different way to price prescription drugs. And again, it matters because Germany still relies on private insurance systems, private doctors, and it's not the government that's setting the price in Germany, and yet they're pulling drug prices down. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about what the U.S. could learn from how Germany achieves lower prices for patients on prescription drugs. And we're joined today by Noam Levy. He writes about national healthcare policy for the Los Angeles Times. And he went to Germany to explore this question as part of his ongoing series on American health insurance. And we have a link to his story at onpointradio.org. Lee Purvis is also with us. She's director of health services research at the AARP Public Policy Institute. And we've got a lot of comments coming in online, Noam and Lee. Someone calling themselves Gerald F. Nord says neither Germany nor France nor Japan has something like Medicare for all, and they y'all do better than we do. But it may be that we can't have their degree of private insurer involvement because our insurance companies are just too wealthy and our political system too money-bound, making regulatory capture a problem from day zero. Let's go to the phone. Let's go to Chris, who's calling from Miami, Florida. Chris, you're on the air.
Thank you. Hi. One of the elephants in the room that hasn't really been discussed is that, as one of the previous callers alluded, drugs are available first in the United States. Typically 80% or so, according to New England Journal of Medicine, of new procedures, new drugs are developed in the United States. And the drug companies have to recapture the cost of getting those drugs through the FDA. Now, individual cost of efficacy and safety costs over $700 million for drug approval in the United States. And the cost of successful and unsuccessful trials has to be borne by the cost of the drug development in the United States. So in one sense, German costs are piggybacking on the research and efficacy standards that the FDA imposes. So their costs are not quite comparable to those here in the United States. Mm. I'll await your comments off the air.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for your call and for bringing up this important question. I have to say we were somewhat anticipating it, because here's a little bit of tape from Richard Gonzalez. He's the CEO of the pharmaceutical company AbbVie, and he was one of several pharma CEOs who testified before the Senate Finance Committee in a hearing last February, arguing as to why Americans shouldn't be allowed to pay less for their prescriptions, such as Canadians or Europeans, or in this case, Germans do. And here's Gonzalez in February.
I think the fundamental issue is this. Our system is built around a variety of pricing around the world, but that overall system supports our R&D model. If a market at the size of the United States were to collapse to the lower end of that pricing model, then I can just tell you AbbVie would not be able to invest the level of R&D that it invests today. So that's the reality.
So that's Richard Gonzalez, CEO of the pharmaceutical company AbbVie, making the argument that U.S. patients are the ones who are subsidizing R&D. But on the other hand, Senate Finance Senator Debbie Stabenow, Democrat of Michigan, in that same hearing said, nope, it's U.S. patients who are subsidizing high profits.
I think that you charge more here because you can. And American taxpayers are subsidizing all of you to be able to have incredibly high profits, the fastest growing part of the healthcare system. And I think the people in Michigan and across the country deserve better. They need to be able to afford the medicine and not have to go to another country to get it.
So Lee Purvis, let me start with you here. Is it that Germany can achieve this different pricing model because U.S. patients are subsidizing R&D for drug development?
I think the shortest answer to that question actually goes back to that exact same hearing. We've been playing some sound bites where all of the CEOs were asked whether they still made a profit in all of the countries where everyone is paying much lower prices. And the answer across the board was yes. So I think the question really is, going back to Senator Stabenow's comment, exactly how much of this is going towards profit, where maybe the question isn't so much how much you're spending on R&D, but the reality is you're making plenty of money even with those lower prices.
Noam, what do you think?
I mean, I think that's right. Clearly, I mean, I think it's worth noting that a lot of the profit for a lot of these companies does come from the U.S. market. They can charge considerably more money, and undoubtedly some of that money does go to support R&D. It also goes, however, to support an incredible amount of marketing and advertising that these companies do in the United States, which is basically unprecedented from a global perspective. I mean, you don't see there are no ads on German television for Humira, for AbbVie's blockbuster drug. And there's been a fair amount of research that shows that, somewhat controversially, some drug companies are spending more on marketing and advertising than they are in R&D. The other point I think that's worth noting to Senator Stabenow's point is that the profit margins of pharmaceutical companies are an order of magnitude larger than other players in the healthcare space. A lot of people beat up on health insurers. A lot of times that's probably justified. But health insurers' profit margins are several times smaller than are many of the drug companies.
How does this have an impact on German pharmaceutical companies themselves? Because we're operating in this conversation from the perspective automatic perspective, and I think it's forgivable because so many U.S.-based pharma companies are kind of the heavyweights here, that it's, you know, these U.S. companies that could be under pressure. But there are pharma companies in Germany, right? Well,
there are. I mean, two of the largest pharma companies in the world, Bayer and Boehringer Ingelheim, are German. And I think it's worth noting that Germany very consciously wanted to create a system that provided adequate returns for pharma. In no small part because they have valued their pharmaceutical market. And that's one of the reasons why, as I mentioned earlier, that the German system allows drug companies to sell at their price for 1 year when they come in to the market while this assessment is underway. So I think, you know, one of the things that's interesting about Germany is that it represents something of a middle ground between the systems like the UK, where you have a much more strong government hand setting lower prices, and in our system, which is a bit like the Wild West.
Yeah. So Lee Purvis, this is exactly why I'm so grateful for Noam's reporting and for having this conversation, because I think, you know, the problem of healthcare costs in the United States is so acute that the conversations tend to be dwindled down to two extremes, right? Our current situation versus massive government intervention. I mean, doesn't the German example show us that there are creative alternatives that are somewhere in between that might work in the United States? And if so, what's preventing us from moving in that direction?
I do think there's a lot to learn from Germany. There's a lot to learn from a lot of countries, frankly, in the world. Everyone has different approaches, and some of those are working very well. And there's no reason not to take a look at those approaches and see whether there's something that can be applied to our system. I think the reality is it's just going to be very difficult to make kind of wholesale changes, which is why I think Germany is so appealing in some ways, because it is kind of, again, a relatively small bite at the apple saying, can we at least just find out whether these drugs are better than existing drugs? And maybe that's one way of approaching it, is kind of a slow steps and very easy to understand, but then also very helpful changes that might make a little bit less daunting to people who have grown accustomed to our current healthcare system.
One might wonder, Noam, since this kind of transparency about effectiveness is already going on in Germany and it's public, like, is there a website that people can go to in the United States to see what the Germans have determined about a certain drug?
There are websites. These don't exactly make stimulating nighttime reading.
People would be interested than you think.
They're highly technical, but a lot of the information is out there. Some of it is, and a good part of it is in English. Not all of it, although there's discussion of getting even more of it translated, just for the very reason that Lee mentioned.
Well, let's go to George, who's calling from Canton, Ohio. George, you're on the air.
Hello. I just wanted to make a comment about ACA insurance and Medicare briefly. I currently take a drug called Tremfya. It's for severe psoriasis. It's biologic. This is my fourth biologic. Humira was the first. This drug was just approved in the U.S., a year and a half ago, so there are no generics. Now, this drug is taken every other month, bimonthly, and retail on this drug, depending upon the pharmacy, is between $10,000 and $13,000 per injection. And right now, with my ACA insurance, I pay $68 premium, and I pay $5 a month for Tremfya, which is outstanding. Now, in 1 week, I go on Medicare. Medicare does not cover this drug, and there are only two supplements that would, and I would pay in the vicinity of $5,000 per injection.
Wow.
So I'm between a rock and a hard place, having to go on Medicare and try to keep on this drug, because if I don't, I'll be 90% covered, and it's very painful. So I'll take comments off the air.
Well, George, thank you for your call. Lee, would you like to respond to George?
Yes. I would first like to recommend that you look into Medicare Part D's low-income subsidy, which can help with costs a lot if you can qualify for it. But you're absolutely right. There are some people facing some significant costs under Medicare Part D and Medicare Part B, both of which can have cost sharing that reaches well into the thousands of dollars. There are some people on Medicare Part B, as in boy, which is injectable drugs, kind of like the biologic you're talking about, who have faced cost sharing of over $100,000. Mm. And we always like to point out that the median income for Medicare beneficiaries is just over $26,000 per year. So there are people who are facing, frankly, insurmountable costs. And that is why AARP has been very active lately on trying to find ways to help reduce out-of-pocket costs for Medicare beneficiaries, because the prices of the products really are driving cost sharing that, frankly, no one can afford.
Well, could Medicare itself be a means by which to, getting back to this transparency issue, to encourage more of the kind of effectiveness transparency that we were talking about? Because I know that they're not going to be anytime in the near future directly negotiating down prices. But given how many people Medicare covers, could they not at least say, well, if we're going to pay at all for this drug, Company X, you got to give us some information about its effectiveness?
It would require some pretty big changes to the Medicare program. Uh-huh. Right now, they really are required just to cover a drug once it's been FDA approved. Medicare Part D plans for the drugs you pick up at the pharmacy can do some negotiation and, you know, kind of make decisions about what drugs to cover. But Medicare Part B, as in boy, again, the injectable drugs, they really are kind of stuck in the sense that they cover everything. So it would require a change. But I think a lot of people, us included, AARP included, would say that Medicare should be allowed to make that type of evaluation, should be able to look at these drugs a little bit more detail than they do now. And that kind of leads into the idea of allowing Medicare to negotiate more broadly for its beneficiaries.
Well, let's go to Amanda, who's calling from Baltimore, Maryland. Amanda, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm actually a medical student, and I also lived in Germany for 2 years. And I just wanted to add to this discussion the fact that Germany's system, if you look at it on a scale from kind of the UK, which is a single-payer system run by the government, where doctors are employed by the government, to our system, which is highly privatized, you have systems like the VA and Medicare that do have some government regulation. And those programs are closer to the UK. And then you have Germany, which is far closer to a single-payer system than it is to our system, which is multi-payer and for-profit. So I just wanted to add to this discussion that Germany's system is not for-profit, and actually you're kind of discussing these sickness funds as a private system, whereas that's actually not what's private in the German system. Actually, 11% of people opt out for a private health insurance, but these sickness funds are something that everyone is required to have as a patient, and are very similar to kind of a single-payer system. And the reason that Germany can have this bargaining power with drug companies is because everyone in Germany is covered,
uh-huh.
and that is because these sickness funds are basically government-funded through taxes.
Right. So, Amanda, actually, this is a really interesting point, and I'm glad you brought it up. So I'm going to turn back to Noam Levy for clarification here. Amanda's saying that it's not all that far away from the idea of a single-payer system in Germany because everyone's required through their taxes to pay into it. Can you clarify, Noam?
So people are required to pay into it, although people also pay, employers also contribute in the way that they do in this country. There's a little bit of confusion, I think, about the terminology, because in Germany, private refers to, as Amanda mentioned, this sort of outside the this system of sickness funds, essentially kind of like a supplemental health insurance, whereas the sickness funds, they exist in this sort of nonprofit world. They are not comparable, say, to United Healthcare or to Anthem. Maybe they're more comparable to a Blue Cross Blue Shield plan. It's a very highly regulated system, but it is important to note, I think, it is not the government that is setting the prices here or doing the negotiating. These are non-governmental organizations, though highly regulated and certainly much more regulated than our system.
Huh. And we're seeing here from Germany's own official websites about this that they're saying 85% of the population in Germany are mandatory or voluntary members of the public health schemes that we've been talking about here, while the rest have private health insurance. Lee Purvis, we've got about a minute here left to go. I'm wondering what your last thought is on lessons that we can learn from the German example and how you'd like to see the United States move forward even a little bit on this issue of drug pricing.
Yeah, I really do hate to sound like a broken record, but I just keep coming back to this very simple question of, do we know whether these new, incredibly expensive drugs are any better than a generic that's already on the market? And I think that is something that we really need to grapple with. And
sorry, guys, we have to evacuate the building.
Oh, it looks like the a fire alarm went off. Is that in Noam's building? Okay, so Noam Levy, who writes about national healthcare policy out of Washington, D.C. for the Los Angeles Times, apparently a fire alarm in the studio where he is in Washington. Noam, I hope you're okay. I hope everyone there in the studio is okay. And thank you so much for your reporting. We have a link to that at onpointradio.org, and we will have Noam back in the next round when he continues his interesting series on health insurance in America. And Lee Purvis with us from Washington as well, in a different place, I presume. Lee, are you still there?
I am.
Okay,
thank you.
I just wanted to say thank you so much for joining us today. Lee is the Director of Health Services Research at the AARP Public Policy Institute. And folks, let us know what you think about what you heard in terms of how Germany prices its drugs. Find us online at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Now you know it really is live radio. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices. And they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons. And there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.